We'll move to question times. Sorry, Senator Farrell. I'm sure I'll improve.
Advise, President, that Minister Wong is away for personal reasons.
Thank you. Then we move to question time. Senator Birmingham.
Thanks, President. President, my question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Farrell. On 18 November, the Defence Minister released a statement regarding a 14 November incident in which a Chinese People's Liberation Army naval vessel engaged in actions that injured Australian defence personnel from the HMAS Toowoomba whilst it was operating in international waters, indeed waters within the Japanese economic zone. On what date was the Prime Minister, Mr Albanese, informed of the Chinese People's Liberation Army naval vessel's actions?
Thank you, Senator Birmingham. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Birmingham, for that question. And I am aware of the statement by the Deputy Prime Minister in respect to the events in relation to HMAS Toowoomba. I am not aware of the date that the Prime Minister was advised about the matter. I'm assuming that just trying to think back over the period of time, I'm assuming it would have been when he was at the APEC meeting in the United States, which I also attended, but I would have to seek some advice on that, Senator Birmingham, and come back to you with a response. As you say, the Deputy Prime Minister made a statement. He did express the Australian government's serious concerns to the Chinese government following what we believe to be an unsafe and unprofessional interaction with the People's Liberation Army destroyer. And that was on the 14th of November 2023. The HMAS Toowoomba was in international waters inside Japan's exclusive economic zone, en route to commence a scheduled port visit. But as to the specifics of your question, I would have to seek some further advice on that.
Thank you, Minister Farrell. Senator Birmingham, first supplementary.
Thanks, President, and I thank Senator Farrell for taking that on notice. On 18 November, the Prime Minister confirmed publicly in a press conference that he had met with President Xi Jinping at the APEC summit, and that the discussions at the APEC summit had included topics such as the relationship between the two countries, trade sanctions imposed by China, a potential visit next year by Chinese Premier Li to Australia. Given the Prime Minister's willingness to identify these topics of discussion, did the Prime Minister raise with President Xi Australia's concerns about
Senator
the actions
Birmingham,
of the Chinese
time for the
naval vessel?
The question has expired. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Birmingham for his first supplementary question. Well, of course, he, in his original question, referred to the statement made, the very clear statement made by the Deputy Prime Minister about what he had said in respect of this particular event. My understanding, President, is that the Australian government raised this issue and our concerns about the unsafe and unprofessional interaction with the People's Liberation Army through all of the appropriate channels. I think it's the Prime Minister himself has made it clear that there were no formal bilaterals with President Xi.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Oh. Senator Birmingham, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, why won't Mr Albanese or the government be transparent with the Australian people about the Prime Minister's handling of this matter, and his failure to confirm whether or not he personally stood up for Australia's interests and confirming whether or not he did so. Mr Albanese was happy to list a number of topics discussed with President Xi. Why won't he be upfront about whether or not he raised this one? Is it simply because he did not raise it?
Thank you, Senator Birmingham. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, Senator Birmingham, for your second supplementary question. Well, I'll pick up Senator Polly's interjection there. Look, we're not going to take advice from the opposition about how either transparency or how we deal with foreign governments. You've only got to look at the absolute mess that our foreign policy was left in after the years of the Morrison government. But the truth of this matter, President, is that the truth of this matter is we have raised our concerns, starting right from the comments of the Deputy Prime Minister about what happened at this event. We've raised our concerns through every channel that is appropriate in these circumstances.
Thank you, Minister. Senator O'Neill.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Home Affairs, Senator Watt. Given that the High Court struck down the Leader of the Opposition's citizenship cessation laws, which he was warned repeatedly were bad law, how is the Albanese Labor government fixing the national security mess left by Mr Dutton?
Before I call the minister, I'm waiting for order. Order. Senator Rustin, when I call for order, it includes you. Senator Rustin, twice. Senator McKenzie, I'm waiting for order. Minister.
Thank you, President. Well, it's time for a few home truths when it comes to home affairs, Senator O'Neill. So I thank you for your question. Today, the Albanese government has flagged its intention to introduce legislation that will enable Australian citizenship to be stripped from individuals who pose a real and immediate risk to our community. The Senate will be aware that this is not the first time such a scheme has been brought before this parliament. In fact, those opposite had two attempts at it in 2015 and 2019. The laws they introduced in 2015 were so unworkable that they had to repeal them. And the second attempt was even worse, being ruled unconstitutional by the High Court this year. And who were the architects of these ill-devised laws? None other than the person who they never mentioned, Mr Scott Morrison, and the person who's out there lecturing us day after day, Mr Peter Dutton. I mean, what a complete mess Mr Dutton left the Home Affairs portfolio in. Report after report. Oh, they don't like it. They don't like it. They don't like
Minister
it.
Minister Watt.
Well, let
Minister
me remind
Watt.
You. Report after
Minister
report
Watt.
Found gaping holes in Mr.
Order on my left. Order. Senator McKenzie, will we just wait for you to come to order after I've called it? Minister Watt, please continue.
Thank you, President. They just don't like hearing the truth, do they? Report after report found gaping holes in Mr Dutton's rorted visa system, which was letting criminals into the country. A visa system that allowed foreign organised crime syndicates into the country. These included the Albanian mafia, who engaged in drug trafficking, money laundering, slavery and sexual exploitation. And who was the minister the whole time that was happening? Mr
Order.
Dutton. And what did he do in the wake of all these reports? He cut compliance officers by 50%. That was his solution, was reducing compliance, not increasing it. A visa backlog
Order.
Of 1 million applications. Who was the minister who let that happen? It was Mr Dutton. And for all his tough talk on boat arrivals, what happened when Mr Dutton was in charge? In 2018, a boat ran aground in far north Queensland carrying 15 asylum seekers.
Senator O'Neill, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. How is the Albanese Labor government's constitutionally sound approach to citizenship laws keeping Australians safe and secure?
Thank you. I'll wait for silence. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President. And Senator O'Neill, isn't it interesting then when you talk about making laws that are constitutional, what we hear from the other side is laughter. And that is the problem that existed under Mr Dutton the entire time they were in government, was they laughed at the notion that laws needed to be constitutional, full of tough talk, but never tough laws that would actually stand up to scrutiny. Unlike those opposite, our primary focus is the real safety of Australians. We listen to our law enforcement agencies and to legal advice. We don't laugh at it like all of those opposite.
Order.
We follow through with actions. We don't just talk tough. And that's what you're seeing today with us flagging important legislation
Order.
To strengthen our national security. A government providing additional support to our agencies, $255 million in additional support. A government doing its job to keep Australians safe. One of the lessons that those opposite refused to learn in government was that unconstitutional laws don't make anyone safer. Tough talk doesn't make Australians safer. Strong laws do, and that's what we're delivering rather
than
just tough talk.
Senator O'Neill, second supplementary.
Thank you very much for that comprehensive response, Minister. Now, can the Minister advise the Senate on some of the current risks for important community cohesion and national security?
Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator O'Neill, for the question. Well, it seems that currently the biggest risk for community cohesion in Australia is the Liberal Party and Mr Peter Dutton. Every day we see this opposition, led by Mr Dutton, obsessed with ratcheting up division and anxiety in our community. And last week, one of his minions, Senator Patterson, was right in line saluting and doing his job, rushing onto television declaring a terrorist attack on the Canada-US border that didn't actually happen and wasn't a terrorist attack at all. Declaring it a terrorist attack before the investigation had even established what had happened. That is how desperate the Liberal Party under Mr Dutton is to ratchet up division and ratchet up anxiety in our community, that they were run out there at the drop of a hat declaring terrorist attacks that actually haven't happened, that haven't been checked at all. Now, Senator Patterson made these claims while at the same time raising questions about a visa process for those fleeing war zones, which is exactly the same process as it was under the government he was a part of.
Thank you, Minister.
To bring people together, not divide them.
Expired. Senator Patterson.
Thank you, Madam President. My question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Farrell. Will the Minister confirm whether media reports are accurate that a boat containing illegal maritime arrivals arrived last week in Western Australia and its passengers were subsequently flown to Nauru? Great
question. Thank you, Senator Patterson. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Patterson for his question. As he would be well and truly aware from his time in the former government, we don't make comments about these operational matters. Obviously, there have been media reports. Obviously,
Order.
There's been media reports about the issues, but as a matter of practice, we don't make comments about these matters, and we're not about to start now, Senator Patterson.
Senator Patterson, first supplementary.
Thank you, Madam President. Will the Minister confirm that this is the 10th attempted illegal venture bound for Australia since the Albanese government was elected in May 2022?
Thank you, Senator Patterson. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Patterson for his first supplementary question. Look, I can only repeat what I said in the earlier question. There's been a long practice of both your government when it was handling these issues and this government that.
Minister Farrell, please resume your seat. Senator Patterson.
Thank you, Madam President. On a direct relevance, border force officials do routinely confirm the number of attempted arrivals in said estimates. Why can't
Senator Patterson, that's not a point of order. Minister Farrell, please continue.
Thank you, President. I can only say the same thing I said in the first question, Senator Patterson. We don't comment on these operational matters, but where we do differ from what the previous government does or did, and what we do is that we don't seek to politicise We don't seek to politicise. We don't seek to politicise national security issues. We are the adults in the room.
Thank you, Minister.
We're the adults in the room.
Minister Farrell, and, thank you. And Minister Farrell, resume your seat. Senator Patterson, second supplementary.
Thank you, Madam President. Since coming to government, Labor has cut $600 million from our border protection regime and flagged its intention to abolish temporary protection visas. Will the government commit to restoring Operation Sovereign Borders in full before we see a return of the tragic loss of life at sea that we saw under the previous Labor government?
Thank you, Senator Patterson. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Patterson for his second supplementary question. What I can say in answer to your question, Senator Patterson, is that the government remains and has always remained absolutely committed to the policies that underpin Operation Sovereign Borders. What we won't do is seek to do what you did, which was politicise these issues. We're going to handle these issues in a sensible and mature way. We're going to make sure that our borders continue to be protected, and the Australian people can be very confident under the Albanese government that we will continue to protect our borders.
Thank you, Minister Farrell. Senator McKim.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Immigration Minister, Senator Watt. Minister, the government's just tabled in the House the Migration Amendment Bridging Visa Conditions and Other Measures Bill 2023. Isn't it the case that the fact that you are having to this week rush through an anti-refugee bill to fix up the previous anti-refugee bill you rushed through in the last sitting week clearly demonstrates that you've been panicked by Mr Dutton into demonising refugees and, in fact, into abandoning proper legislative process and, indeed, the entire concept of good governance?
Thank you, Senator McKim. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President. And Senator McKim, the short answer to your question is no. Well, you would want to characterise it however you would want to support your extensive social media campaigns. But the reality is that the government acted as quickly as possible when we last sat to pass laws so that we could put strict new conditions on the individuals concerned, including ankle bracelets. Now, as was well traversed in the last sittings, the government was faced with a situation where we had a High Court decision which overturned 20 years of precedent, and reasons for that decision were not provided and have not yet been provided. And so the option we had was to do what the Greens Party would have done, which was do nothing, or to actually legislate as best we could in the absence of those decisions. We took the latter option because we take community safety seriously. We weren't prepared to sit back and do nothing, as the Greens Party would have had us do, when we were faced with a situation where now a relatively large number of individuals with, in some cases, serious criminal convictions were released into the community as a result of a High Court decision. So we always said that the laws that we passed when we last sat were going to need refinement, we're going to need amendment, and I dare say when we receive the High Court reasons, whenever that may be, there may need to be further amendments to ensure both the constitutionality of those laws and their full effectiveness. But Senator McKim, if you want to go out to the Australian public and tell them that we don't need to worry about what is now 141 people in the community, then be my guest. But we're not going to take that position, because the Albanese government does take community safety seriously, and we will do our best to make sure that the legislation we pass is effective.
Thank you, Minister Watt. Senator McKim's first supplementary.
Thank you, President. It's amateur hour in this parliament. Minister, why is Labor continuing to allow Mr Dutton to create a two-tiered system of justice in our country, where some refugees and stateless people have fewer rights than Australian citizens, where they are treated differently under the law, where their human rights are abrogated, and they are subject to laws that are contrary to both the legal principle of double jeopardy and Australia's international legal obligations.
Thank you, Senator McKim. Minister Watt, and I remind you, Minister Watt, to address your answers to the chair.
Thank you for the reminders, President. Well, again, Senator McKim, I reject Senator McKim's premise in this question. And as I say, this came down purely and simply to a matter of community safety. And the government takes that seriously. We welcomed the support of the opposition in passing that legislation, which was necessary to ensure that the Australian community was safe. And I find it interesting that the Greens Party wants to go around to the Australian public saying that we should do nothing about the fact that what is now 141 or 142 individuals, with in some cases serious criminal convictions, should be released into the community without any form of monitoring, because that's what the Greens Party would have done. That's not the Australian government's position. I don't think that's what the Australian community would expect either, and that's why we passed that legislation, and we will continue to refine it to make it protect people as best we can.
Thank you, Minister. Senator McKim, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Can you confirm that it is Australian Labor Party policy to oppose mandatory sentencing? Why did the government abjectly cave in to Mr Dutton last week and vote against Labor members' policy to oppose mandatory sentencing? And why have you continued to oppose Labor members' policy this week by introducing mandatory sentencing in your latest anti-refugee bill?
Thank you, Senator McKim. Minister Watt.
Thanks again, Senator McKim, and thanks, President. These matters were extensively covered in the debate that we had in the legislation that the Greens Party opposed when we last sat. And the government makes no apologies for passing tough laws to keep the Australian community safe. And it would seem that the Greens Party is the only group in this parliament who doesn't think that community safety matters.
Minister Watt, please resume your seat. Senator McKim.
Thank you, President. Point of order on relevance. It wasn't about the Greens Party. It was actually about Labor Party policy.
The minister is being relevant, and I'll listen carefully to make sure he remains relevant. Minister.
So, thank you, President. So, as I say, we make no apologies for taking the Australian people's safety seriously, for legislating quickly to preserve that safety, and, of course, for undertaking a range of other measures to keep the Australian community safe, including the more than $250 million that was announced today to maintain the protections that were required under this legislation, to provide the Border Force and the Police Force, Australian Federal Police, with the resources they need to enforce that legislation. And again, I'm surprised that the Greens Party think that the Australian community safety doesn't matter.
Thank you, Minister Watt. Senator Stewart.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. The Albanese government is taking comprehensive action to tackle cost of living pressures. Can the Minister outline how the government is working hard to get costs down for families and individuals, get wages up for workers, and strengthening the budget foundation to deliver tangible benefits for Australians? And how is this approach helping to relieve the cost of living at a time when global economic challenges persist?
Thank you, Senator Stewart. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, and I thank Senator Stewart for the question and for her interest in addressing cost of living pressures for Australian households. Since we came to government, the government has been totally focused on addressing cost of living issues, and you saw that in our election commitments, which directly went to assisting households with cost of living pressures, and you've seen it with the way we've handled issues when we've been in government, including in providing energy bill relief at around this time last year in the final weeks of the parliament, which those opposite voted against, of course. We're working hard to support families by introducing measures which bring down the cost of living, like cheaper childcare and reducing medicine costs. And the results that we're seeing, particularly in the area of medicines, but also in childcare fees, which are a big part of household budgets when you have particularly children under the age of five. When we look at reducing medicines costs, We've seen significant savings, $20 million each month from lowering the price of monthly scripts, and that money going directly into people's pockets. And in relation to 60-day dispensing, which again those opposite voted against, we've already seen 600,000 scripts saving $5 million. Yeah, yeah. As a result of the changes that we have been putting in place and for which you voted against. We are also seeing improved good results, and it is early days, in the increase that we have made to bulk billing, the increased investment that we've made to bulk billing, which is allowing more GPs to bulk bill more people. And we've been doing this because we've been taking measures to strengthen the budget so that we can find room for these important programs that assist Australians with increasing cost of living, and we will continue to do so.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Stewart, first supplementary.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Minister, for outlining just some of the things that we're doing in response. Minister, the government is delivering significant investment in cost of living relief, including the $23 billion package delivered by the government. Can the minister also provide further details on how specific initiatives like cheaper childcare are easing financial pressures on families while also delivering lasting social reform?
Thank you, Senator Stewart. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, and I thank Senator Stewart for the question. Well, as Senator Stewart said, our $23 billion cost of living package, large parts of which those opposite voted against, includes those important measures like energy bill relief, cheaper childcare, the bulk billing investments that are rolling through, cheaper medicines, 60-day dispensing, boosting income support payments, addressing some of the rental pressures with the Commonwealth Rent Assistance, our fee-free TAFE, building more affordable homes, expanding paid parental leave, getting wages moving again. This is all part of our agenda to ensure that Australians can keep up with those cost of living pressures that we're seeing. But we're also importantly seeing focusing on measures that improve the productive side of the economy as well. So like our investments into childcare, which we see as a significant economic reform, and indeed our extension to PPL, allowing more women
to
work.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Stewart, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Thank you, Minister, for that response. Can the Minister update the Senate on how the government's policies have led to wages growing at the fastest rate in a decade? How do these efforts in securing fair pay align with Albanese government's broader economic plan? How does this further support the efforts to alleviate cost of living pressures facing Australians and their families?
Order. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Stewart for the supplementary. We've been focused on getting wages moving again since we came to government, because we inherited an economy and policies from the former government that had had low wages as a deliberate design feature of their economic architecture, and we will never let you forget it. You had minimum wage submissions that had whole sections on the importance of low wage work. This is what you were when you were in government, and we have been putting in place changes. Aged care workers finally getting the recognition that respect they deserve, a 15% wage increase, fully funded, highly feminised, low-paid work that had led to the significant workforce issues, which led to an aged care system which the Royal Commission itself characterised as a system of neglect. That is what you oversaw, and we have put in place measures.
Minister, the time for responding has expired. Senator Roberts.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Health and Aged Care, Senator Gallagher. Minister, how many vaccines are subject to an indemnity from the Australian government?
Thank you, Senator Roberts. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, Senator Roberts. I'll just see if I can provide you with an accurate answer. I do know that there were indemnity arrangements put in place under the former government for the vaccines that were approved then in the early stages of the pandemic, and those indemnity arrangements continue. I think we have traversed this at estimates a bit. I'm not sure if there is anything else I can provide, but indemnity arrangements were put in place for the vaccines that the government procured to enable national vaccine rollout program to be undertaken during the pandemic emergency. And that was an important part of ensuring that we could procure the vaccine in the amount that we needed and provide it to the Australian people. I would also say that whilst the indemnity arrangements were in place, all of the required approvals to ensure the safety of the vaccines prior to the vaccines being rolled through were followed through the TGA processes that we have also traversed at length in estimates. And that I think we also have the COVID-19 vaccine claim scheme, which was also established to run alongside the national rollout of the vaccine program. And I would say that it was an important response to the pandemic to ensure that we could get as many people vaccinated as possible in a safe way, to ensure that we minimise the impact of significant disease and the at the very serious end, and also minimise the deaths that occurred from contracting COVID-19.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Roberts, first supplementary.
Thank you. Indemnities have been issued for 14 different COVID products. Each new COVID vaccine or shot has been given an indemnity, the most recent on 10th of October 2023. Minister, with demand for the booster down to 5.5% for those under 65 and multiple vendors, the argument that indemnities are needed to get stock is a patent nonsense. What is the real reason for these new indemnities issued only 6 weeks ago?
Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, I can't go into the confidential agreements that have been reached with procuring vaccines. These are agreements that are reached between the government and the vaccine provider, and we do so in a way that allows for the rollout of continued vaccination and booster shots to protect people from COVID-19. These are the arrangements that were entered into during the pandemic. Those arrangements are continuing. We think there's a very important public health reason to ensure that we are procuring vaccines and getting them, making them available for people to take their booster. And I would say that booster levels remain low, or the boost, and we do want to see those increase, and that people should particularly go and get their booster if they're ready for one, or if they're 6 months past the last COVID-19 bout.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Roberts, second supplementary.
So, Minister, you won't explain to the taxpayers why you're using their money and putting it at risk. So let's ask a second supplementary. This government has offered Moderna an indemnity for every vaccine or shot manufactured in their new Australian factory currently under construction, including regular non-pandemic vaccines. Minister, why has your government not been honest in telling taxpayers they are paying for new vaccine harm during the COVID period and for all time?
Thank you, Senator Roberts. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, I'm not sure what Senator Roberts is referring to in I reject the claim that we are in somehow using taxpayers' money and causing vaccine harm. That is not appropriate, and I absolutely categorically reject that. If there is anything further I can provide Senator Roberts around the arrangements with Moderna in particular, I am happy to arrange that. I don't have that information before me, but I do accept that governments do negotiate agreements with companies around the supply and availability of medicines and vaccines in this instance, to ensure that we are able to provide the medicines Australia needs, and also ensure that we have enough of the vaccines to provide that appropriate coverage, particularly for COVID-19 protection.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Cash.
Thank you. And my question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Farrell. Minister, your government has today admitted that over 140 detainees, including paedophiles, rapists, murderers and a contract killer, have been released into the Australian community following the recent High Court decision. How many more detainees does the government expect to release before Christmas?
Thank you, Senator Cash. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thanks, Senator Cash, for her question. She does correctly identify the number of people that have... I'll give credit where credit due. It so infrequent, Senator Cash, that it's worth observing. The government has responded very quickly to the issues that have arisen as a result of the decision of the High Court last week, and we have done this in a very quick and prompt fashion, and I have to...
Minister Farrell, please resume your seat. Senator Cash.
Thank you. It's a point of order in relation to relevance. The question was in relation to how many do you intend on releasing in the lead-up to Christmas?
And there was a few sentences before then, Senator Cash, that went to how many that which had been released, and that's the part the minister's responding to. But I will continue to listen carefully, and if the whole question isn't addressed, I'll draw that to the minister's attention. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, thank you, President. Well, as I said, I did acknowledge that 141 people have been released. Of course, the actions of the government in seeking to address the failures of the legislative program under the former government will hopefully lead to a situation where we can properly address this situation. We've introduced strong laws designed to protect the Australian community, and of course, as we've heard today, the minister has boosted funding for the ABF, the AFP, and the CDPP to enforce these laws.
Senator Cash.
Thank you. And again, it's a point of order in relation to relevance. And with all due respect, 1 minute and over 30 seconds in, how many more does the government expect to release before Christmas is the question.
I will draw the minister to the second part of your question, Senator Cash. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President. Well, I just don't think Senator Cash is listening to my... listening to my response, because
order.
What the government has done, and to their credit, to the support of the opposition, is to introduce laws that
thank you,
will...
Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Cash, first supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Your government has today admitted that four detainees have refused to have tracking devices attached to them. Have any of these detainees been charged with breaching the new criminal provisions of the Migration Act? Are any of them now being held in custody? And is one of the detainees' whereabouts unknown to authorities?
Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Cash for her first supplementary question. My understanding is that the individuals that you're talking about have been referred to the police for action to be taken by the police in respect of these matters. Had your legislation, the legislation that Mr. Dutton rushed through the parliament without due consideration for the constant you of all ministers in the or former ministers in this place, Senator Cash, should have understood the consequences of trying to pass unconstitutional piece of legislation which sooner or later,
thank
the
you,
High
Minister
Court
Farrell. The time for answering has expired. Senator Cash, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. How long before these dangerous criminals were released into the community were state governments briefed by the federal government about their imminent release?
Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Cash for her second supplementary questions. As I understand it, there's been regular briefings between the relevant Commonwealth bodies, whether it be Border Force or the Australian Federal Police, with the state governments and state and territory governments, and we have ensured that they be kept up to date with any developments. Can I go through some of the things that have in fact occurred? So prior to the High Court decision, senior ABF officials briefed local, state and territory police counterparts on the possible implications of the case. So in the event that it was an adverse decision, they were brief. We established Operation Aegis in November to manage the overall response.
Thank you, Minister Farrell. The time for answering has expired. Senator Waters.
Thanks very much, President. My question is to the Minister for Women, Senator Gallagher. It's day three of the UN's 16 Days of Activism campaign for the elimination of violence against women. This year, 54 women have been killed already, including six in just 1 week this month. It's clear we need more funding for prevention work, with respectful relationships education in schools and prevention work in sporting clubs, workplaces and all areas of society. In the response space, the women's safety sector have long called for $1 billion a year in funding for frontline support services to meet demand and ensure that everyone who seeks help fleeing violence can get it. In budget estimates this year, the department confirmed that the total federal funding commitment to prevent violence against women over the next 5 years is only $2.23 billion, less than half the $5 billion the sector needs to ensure that no one who seeks help is turned away. Why is the government not spending $1 billion
a
year on women escaping violence?
Thank you, Senator Waters. The time for answering the question has expired. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Waters for the question and acknowledge her long advocacy in this space around women's safety. And I too would like to put on the record how devastating the loss of life in this country is every year, in particular in the last couple of months, where we have seen an increased number of women who have died at the hands of their former partner or their partner. It is a massive problem in this country, and you know, we, whilst government can't, and I will come to your question, Senator Waters, but this is a national problem that requires all parts of community and the economy to work together to get rid of the attitudes and the views that lead to this type of violence against women and children. And it's not just the women who have died, although obviously that is devastating in itself. It's the hundreds and thousands of women and children who are hospitalised and homeless and fear for their lives every day from living in in such a, you know, a violent arrangements. So on the point you raise, which is around the level of investment, and as you say, we have allocated $2.3 billion across a range of programs to end violence against women and children under the national plan. And we will always, as Minister Rishworth, myself, Minister Elliott, continue to work with states and territories to identify other areas of need, and all governments are working together to look at how we can end violence against women and children.
Thank you, Minister.
Sorry, I will come.
Senator Waters, first supplementary.
Thanks, President. After years of the Greens and many organisations calling for a national toll of women killed by violence to be collated and publicised by government rather than simply relying on volunteer orgs to do that work, over the weekend the government announced what seems to be a version of that, a dashboard for official reporting on intimate partner homicide, which will provide quarterly updates from mid-next year. How much funding has been allocated to this? Why is it only reporting quarterly? Why the seven-month delay until it starts? And how will the figures be publicised to help drive change?
Thank you, Senator Waters. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. I'll come back if there's anything further I can provide, but you are right. This is one of the issues that the Ministers for Women's Safety and yourself and others have been calling for, because there is a range of organisations that report numbers of deaths and homicides against women, but a number use different information, and trying to get a picture of the exact information with a, you know, with a definition that people agree on has been difficult. But as part of it, that the dashboard will be introduced. I think the time is about putting in place all the systems to ensure that those that reporting, particularly from states and territory, is accurate. It's being developed by the Australian Institute of Criminology. It will be able to provide us with more up-to-date figures, which is part of understanding the extent of the problem.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Waters, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. We think we know that gender inequality drives domestic, family and sexual violence, but when less than 2% of perpetrators ever have contact with the police or the criminal justice system, there's a lot more we need to understand about what drives perpetrators. We need a national prevalence study like the Perpetration Project. Will the federal government fund and commit to a repeatable national prevalence study on the perpetration of domestic, family and sexual violence?
Minister.
Thank you. And this is in Minister Rishworth's portfolio area. So if there is further work, if there's anything further, I will come back on. I know that Minister Rishworth has been looking at the issue of perpetrators and perpetrator programs. And in fact, it's an important part of the National Plan to End Violence Against Women and Children. And I know that the sector itself has been very keen to see more happen in that space, but I don't have anything further to add for you, but I will see if Minister Rishworth through Minister Rishworth, provide any more information. And I would also say we are working nationally to improve the police information that is provided to police around the country in real time so that some of those issues about crossing jurisdictions and women's safety can be addressed.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Stirl.
My question is to the Minister for Trade and Tourism, Senator Farrell. Earlier this month, the Minister visited the United States for this year's APEC Summit in San Francisco. This followed meetings in Osaka, Japan to attend the G7 Trade Ministers meeting, and Shanghai, China to attend the China International Import Expo. Minister, how does the government's, how does Australia's participation in these international meetings support the government's trade diversification strategy?
Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President. And can I thank Senator Stirl for his question, and know that he understands just how important trade is to the great state of Western Australia. The Albanese Labor government is committed to building strong economic ties with our trading partners to deliver practical outcomes for Australia's exporters and create more well-paying jobs for Australians. That's why earlier this month, the Prime Minister and I travelled to San Francisco to attend APEC meetings. APEC has long been at the forefront of pushing the trade liberalisation agenda. This year's APEC priorities included advancing the digital trade agenda and ensuring inclusivity and sustainability are mainstreamed into trade and investment policies. While in San Francisco and Shanghai, I met with Minister of Commerce, the Chinese Minister of Commerce, Wen Wentao. Engagement with China has proven effective, so just ask any Australian exporter of coal, cotton, copper, concentrates, timber, logs, oat and hay, and barley and stone fruits. Think of all the jobs created as a result of the considered approach by the Albanese government has taken to restoring market access for these products. A ministerial meeting also took place in San Francisco to advance the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework negotiations. IPEF, as it's known, is designed to promote workers' rights, lift and align trading standards, build supply chain resilience, and to promote clean energy investment so that trade flows more freely and more fairly in the Indo-Pacific region, our region. More trade, not less, more trade means more well-paying jobs, more national income, and of course, more opportunities for businesses and for workers.
Thank you, Minister Farrell. Senator Stirl, first supplementary.
Can the Minister briefly outline what practical benefits Australian exporters, businesses and workers can expect from Australia's participation in economic agreements like APEC and the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework?
Thank you, Senator Stirl. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President. And I again thank Senator Stirl for his first supplementary question. The 2023 APEC agenda and the IPEF outcomes were complementary. Both helped to build a more resilient and interconnected region, promote an innovative environment for the sustainable future, and strengthen an equitable and inclusive future for all. In San Francisco, I was pleased to sign Australia up to the new IPEF supply chain agreement. This is a practical agreement that will help fix future supply chain crises fast, easing cost pressures on households by getting more product into the market. Prime Minister Albanese also announced the creation of a IPEF Critical Minerals Dialogue, which will enhance Australia's role as a renewable energy superpower. Outcomes such as these will strengthen Australian ties with our trading
partners.
Senator
Stirl, second supplementary.
Digital trade and services are an important focus of APEC and IPEF. How is the government working to attract more investment in Australia's digital and tech sector?
Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Stirl for his second supplementary question. San Francisco is the gateway to Silicon Valley, and Silicon Valley is the home of global tech innovation, including artificial intelligence. I was pleased to meet with representatives from Google, Salesforce, as well as innovative Australian startups using satellite technology to improve wine growing around the world. The Albanese government is actively supporting Australian innovation, as well as attracting foreign investment in technology to create more well-paying jobs at home. For example, Microsoft recently announced a $5 billion investment in Australia, as well as creating new artificial intelligence partnerships with the Digital Transformation Agency. This investment helps to support the government's commitment of creating 1.2 million jobs, tech-related jobs, by 2030.
Senator Hume.
Yes. Thank you, Madam President. My question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Farrell. Core inflation is higher in Australia than in six of the seven G7 countries. Mm-hmm. And last week, the RBA Governor said that inflation was homegrown, saying that prices are rising strongly for the majority of goods and services that we all consume. Yet, the very next day, the Prime Minister continued to insist that inflation was coming from overseas. Who is correct, the RBA Governor or the Prime Minister?
Thank you, Senator Hume. Minister Farrell.
President, and thank you, Senator Hume, for your question. Well, Governor Bullock did make some comments last week, but in particular, she made it clear that inflation in this country, under the policies of the Albanese Labor government, is moderating, but it has been more persistent overseas, and it's expected to be more persistent here as well. In other words, she acknowledges that the inflation situation is moderating, and I'd put it to you, Senator Hume, it's because of the policies of this government. The reality is, as Governor Bullock made it clear, it's been more persistent overseas. Inflation has been more persistent overseas, and it's expected to be more persistent here as well. There are a few parts of the inflation challenge.
Minister Farrell, please resume your seat. Senator Birmingham.
Point of order, President, on direct relevance. I appreciate the Minister is referencing the RBA Governor's remarks in a broad sense and other parts of her remarks, but the question asked went specific to whether or not it is homegrown inflation, that element of Governor Bullock's remarks, and I ask the Minister to be drawn to that element of the Governor's remarks. Is it homegrown? Is the Governor right or the Prime Minister right?
Thank you, Senator Birmingham. You are correct that the Minister was referring to the first parts of that question, which he is entitled to do, and I'll draw his attention to the second part of that question. And I also note that interjections are disorderly, but the Minister is also able to reference those. Minister Farrell.
Thank you. Thank you, President. The Governor, Governor Bullock, has also said that our budget strategy is very helpful and very positive, and that the ABS has shown our cost of living policies have taken a half a percentage point off inflation. And of course, the government is focused on productivity enhancing investments and supporting workforce participation so that we can grow supply and ease inflation pressures into the future. Now, I know the opposition doesn't like all of those things happening, but they're the things this government is doing.
Thank you,
all
Minister.
Of the things that
the
you didn't do in government.
The time for answering has expired. Senator Hume, first supplementary.
Madam President, Minister, is inflation now a homegrown problem?
Thank you, Senator Hume. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thanks, Senator Hume, for her first supplementary question. It's fair to say that inflation peaked here lower and later than most G7 nations, so its moderation is a bit behind. The most recent IMF World Economic Outlook stated that they expect the return to target to take until at least 2025 in most nations. Treasury expects inflation to return to target next financial year. So the return to target is expected to be in line with most other nations. Our policies...
Minister Farrell, please resume your seat. Senator Birmingham.
President, a point of order on the direct relevance of the minister. It would be hard for a senator to have a more tightly worded question than Senator Hume's six-word question. Is inflation now a homegrown problem? Now, Senator Farrell is going vaguely around issues of inflation in every possible way, but addressing the actual question that Senator Hume has asked. Is it a homegrown problem?
Thank you, Senator.
They were the words
Birmingham.
Of the RBA Governor.
Senator Birmingham, as you know, I do allow the leaders some latitude, but that was verging into a statement. Minister Farrell, I will draw your attention to Senator Hume's question.
Thank you, President. Well, look, I'm simply trying to explain that inflation has been a worldwide issue. It hasn't just been an Australian issue. It's been a worldwide issue, and we are dealing with it in
Thank
the
you,
absolute
Thank
best
you, Minister.
Way we
the
possibly
time for
can.
Answering has expired. Senator Hume, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Over 12.8 million Australians are now more stressed about their finances this year compared to last year, an increase of 10%. Of all the Australians reaching out for help from charities, almost half are doing so for the first time. A submission to the Cost of Living Committee said, "I'm not buying as much fresh produce these days. Due to the cost of fuel, I can't afford to spend Christmas with my family. Most of them are in regional New South Wales and I am in Rockhampton." Is this the sort of pain that Australians that the Prime Minister meant when he said in January that his New Year's resolution was to address the cost of living?
Order on my right. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President. Thanks, Senator Hume, for her second supplementary question. No.
Senator Polly.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Aged Care, Senator Gallagher. The Aged Care Royal Commission's final report told a shocking story of neglect, inaction and a lack of ambition to plan for the growing demand in the aged care sector. A key recommendation of the final report was that registered nurses should be required on site in residential aged care homes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The report has also... I'd listen if I was you. The
report has also... Continue with the question.
The report has also recommended the introduction of the minimum care time for registered nurses, enrolled nurses and personal care workers. How is the Albanese government delivering its election commitment to put nurses back into nursing homes?
Thank you, Senator Polly. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Polly for her continued interest in this important area of service delivery and reform for the Albanese government. And I acknowledge the work that Minister Wells from the other place has been doing in implementing the recommendations from the Royal Commission and cleaning up and improving the standard of care that's provided to our most elderly citizens. Aged care workers care for some of our most vulnerable older Australians. They do crucial, demanding and highly skilled work every day. And the Royal Commission into Aged Care Quality and Safety found that unacceptable staffing levels in aged care homes had created horrific environments of substandard care caused by a lack of ambition to plan for growing demand in the sector. That's why we acted very quickly to lift the standard of care and implement the recommendations of the Royal Commission to make sure that aged care residents get the clinical care they need. On average, there is now a registered nurse on site in aged care 98% of the time in Australia, or 23.5 hours a day. 88% of all homes that reported data have a nurse 24/7, and the majority of remaining homes are extremely close to meeting that target. We're also seeing improvements in the amount of care being provided by registered nurses, enrolled nurses and personal care workers. Our data shows that older Australians are receiving an additional 1.8 million minutes of care every single day under the Albanese government.
Senator Polly, first supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Just another mess we have to clean up. Can the Minister inform the Senate how the government's work to build the aged care workforce is helping to deliver Labor's promise to lift the standard of aged care in Australia?
Thank you, Senator Polly. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. Our commitment to build a skilled aged care workforce is having a real tangible effect on the ground. In the past year, there has been a reduction in the number of pressure injuries, significant unplanned weight loss, falls, polypharmacy, in the use of antipsychotics and in the use of physical restraints in aged care. We're also seeing improvements in the star ratings data with fewer 1- and 2-star ratings and more 4- and 5-star ratings. And that's what 24/7 nursing has always been about, building trust, fewer falls, fewer injuries, fewer avoidable hospital admissions and more older people feeling safe and respected in aged care. Before the election, older Australians were scared about the prospect of going into an aged care home, with the Royal Commission exposing the shocking tale of neglect that happened on the watch of those opposite. Now, in the response to the reforms of this government, trust and confidence in the sector is growing.
Senator Polly, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Can the Minister advise how the government is recognising the hard work of aged care workers who are helping the government lift the standards of aged care in this country?
Thank you, Senator Polly. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, and I thank Senator Polly for that supplementary. And yes, I can. Aged care workers for way too long were underpaid and undervalued for their crucial work. In fact, they were some of the lowest paid workers in the economy, and is it any wonder that we saw people leaving the sector to find jobs elsewhere?
Order.
In the May budget, we funded a historic pay rise for aged care workers, 15% increase to the award minimum. And because of this pay rise, personal care workers are now taking home up to $7,300 more each year than they were getting under the former government. Registered nurses are taking home up to $10,000 more each year. We're seeing the difference that this is making to recruitment and retention. Data from seek.com shows a 72% increase in applications per job advertisement for aged care nursing roles from January 2023 to June 2023.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Farrell.
Thank you, President. I request that further questions be placed on the notice paper.